This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Lonnie Taylor. I'm speaking with locals about the experience of living in tiny homes and how they would like to see local policy improve and make it possible to live this tiny home lifestyle. Julie Nelson.
Yeah, I live in a tiny home. I've been living in it for 2.5 years, just about. A couple friends and I built it with a lot of salvaged materials. And in a lot of ways, it really works for me. For 2 years, we didn't have a bathroom, which was like really a thing. It was a really nice space, but I didn't include a bathroom in the plan because it was such a small space. So that was challenging. And we did a lot of bucket bathing outside. But it has been in a way to have somewhat more stable housing. I think that the thing that maybe people who live in tiny homes still struggle with is if they lose the land, like for whatever reason, they lose the land that they live on, is no longer available, if they have any sort of conflict with the person who actually owns the land that they live on, then it costs a lot of money to move a tiny home, like upwards of $10,000, depending on like how much work needs to be done at the site. In my case, I needed to bring water and power, and it was, yeah, more than $10,000 for a new site. I feel really safe and really comfortable in the place that I'm at, and I love the people whose land I'm living on. But there's always going to be that little bit of a power dynamic where you're like, ah, I've really got to bring it in a good way because I could lose this spot, and then what would I do? I wouldn't even be able to afford to move my house, and I would have to sell it. So there is like definitely a crux there. There's like a little bit of discomfort for sure. But I feel really lucky and glad that I have my tiny home.
How much did it cost all in, do you think, to build your tiny home?
Minus my labor, which I didn't really account for, and I worked on it pretty much all the times anyone worked on it, around $40,000 or just under $40,000. So it was quite affordable. It's a really nice, it's 26 by 10, and it is very like bright and open. So it feels really good. Yeah, as far as like more stable housing generally, and tiny homes is like a solution to that. I do have so many people who have left in the last couple of years because of not having a place to live. And I guess it feels like more and more people are living in boats and like trailers that are very movable. Things that you don't have to depend so much on having that safe, steady piece of land to put your tiny home because it's a big object. You can't just be like plonking it around. I see a lot of people living in those more movable, maybe less comfortable spaces, and folks who want something that's more like middle of the road, like they'll live in a tiny home, but they want it to have plumbing and like a couple different sleeping spaces and for it to be bright or airy and not really closed in like some trailers and boats can feel. Living it seems really hard too and very inaccessible for a lot of people.
So for your own personal experience, living in a tiny home and being able to afford those materials, do you feel like that lifestyle allows you to save more money in hopes of affording your own land one day or providing that kind of stability? Or
I don't have a goal of owning my own land for a number of reasons. I don't know if we have to get too into it, but I'm a pretty like a person who likes the idea of movement a lot, and I think that's something that I'm like really accepting about myself. I don't want to like really put down roots in that way. I might live here for 20 years, but I would like to, I don't know. And also then it just feels I think it would be so complicated, and I would like to have something that I could bring other people in. If I had something like that, I think I would fill it with all the people who I would want to have around and help if they didn't have space. But no, it's not a goal. I am saving money, but that allows me to work as an artist rather than I'm cleaning and working at the bookstore and stuff too, but it allows me to do the things that I love more and not have a huge amount of overhead. I'm not the most organized person, and I feel like managing that, yeah, like managing big things like that isn't really my goal in life. But I do want us to be safe, and I have a child, so I want him to have a place to live in the future if he wants it, and his dad has a piece of land, so that is a potential option for them. And he actually, is very welcoming for people to live on his land, which is really wonderful, that he sees that people need space and makes space for people, as long as it feels safe for him.
CKTZ had the chance to chat with local policymakers Michelle Babchuk and Mark Vanesh. We haven't received the BC Housing Grant for this Rainbow Bridge. They've applied for it twice now and have not got it. And what that means is they have a plan that they've put together with townhomes for that. And that's all you can do if you get a BC Housing. There's not a lot of alternatives to that. And here in Cortez, we have lots of tiny home villages on private land. This is something that Victoria and Nanaimo are trying to figure out how to provide zoning for to make happen. They're calling them laneway houses, right? So what can be done here, and maybe for the Rainbow Ridge development, but also just in the entire region, to make it easier for tiny home villages and communities like that to start coming into fruition legally?
Most of the legalities, from my perspective, and this is where I think Mark and I have the ability to communicate really well, because I come out of local government. So a lot of the legalities around zoning and what can be put there are actually done at the local government level. For financing, yes. So BC Housing is the place where you're going to come for your money. So at this particular point, we just passed our budget, our 2023 budget, with $4.2 billion, the biggest three-year investment into housing that this province has ever seen. And that's to look at all spectrum of housing, all available pieces of housing that communities are wanting to take a look at. So as these communities take a look at what they want in their communities, as opposed to the government coming in and saying, you shall have a mobile home park, that will solve your problem. We're actually going out to the communities and working with our locally elected people so that these are actually fitting into the form and character of what the island is looking for. I've looked at all the schematics. They're fantastic. They're not a metal box that doesn't fit into anything that Cortez Islanders even remotely see as a housing. And I think we're going to be quite successful in the future. We've had a bit of a problem with smaller communities in the past, because it's very difficult to fit some of it into the housing, BC housing parameters, especially when they're looking at a per square foot model, because it's a lot more expensive to build on an island or in a rural area like Port Hardy. We have the same issues up there. But through our government, we have now formed a rural caucus, and we are highlighting all of those issues that rural MLAs are having inside of the policies and legislations that are coming. So I'm really looking forward to making sure that the rural and remote pieces are included in a lot of those programs. And we now have a nod from the Premier to make sure that rural and remote MLAs are being heard and are reflected with inside those policies and legislation.
That money that you're talking about, how does Cortez Island specifically get a slice of that?
One of the things I've learned in my background with writing grants is that often you don't get the grant the first time. And I know that the Cortez Housing Society is persistent, and they're going to be putting another application, and we're going to get this funding, and it's going to happen. And there's a housing crisis across the province, there's a housing crisis across the country, and we can't fix it overnight. But I'm really encouraged by having a provincial government that is taking it seriously and is making record investments in it. And I'm confident that we're going to get this built. Your question about the tiny house, a lot of people have come up to me and says, hey, Mark, let's just put a tiny house park up. It seemed really obvious to me, okay, yeah, this is going to be one of the easy, fast solutions. But the more I've looked into it, it is challenging because of the legality. If you're a private property owner and you want someone to move a trailer onto your property, fine, you can do that. Or a business that wants to create a trailer park, you have to be able to insure that trailer park. And if the housing on that house is not insurable because it's an RV or because it's a tiny house that wasn't built to code, that's where the challenges come into. So I think there is room for the province to look at reevaluating some of the code as far as tiny house goes. There's tiny houses that can be on solar with a composting toilet and a 12-volt battery system, which is very different from what they're used to. So I think there's room for the provincial government to be more flexible as to what the realities are on the ground and what people want. And I think it's just important for people to know that if we're going to do this in a public way, we have to make sure that it's done safely and that we are following the codes. But it's a huge opportunity. There are tiny house developers on Cortez Island that are building tiny houses anywhere between 50 and 75,000. It's a solution. It's a solution that people want because they want affordable housing. They don't need the big house. And it's also a stepping stone for young people to be able to have a meaningful life here.
Yeah, I think it's also a diversity of housing. A tiny house might not be what everybody wants to live in. So it's not a one solution fits all type of thing. So we have to be taking a look at what that looks like from seniors and accessibility for housing so that they can live in their houses without having to go into long-term care or anything like that. But also we've got families that need housing. So there's a whole bunch of spectrum of housing that needs to be taken a look at, including housing that might have to come with services as well. As we take a look at some of the mental health and addiction challenges that we're seeing pop up quite a bit, and that is everywhere as well. And that's another thing that I'm extremely proud of. Another record investment piece from our government, $1 billion we just passed in the budget to start looking at mental health and addictions treatment centers. And as we switch from taking a look at mental health and addictions as a justice issue, as to a health issue, that has been a hard switch for a lot of people to make, but it's coming. And part of that is also reflected in that housing budget as well, as we look at all the continuum of care pieces as well.
I think that's a really good point when you're talking about diversity of solutions.
Yeah.
So yes, Rainbow Ridge, that's part of the solution. Let's get some community-owned rental housing built, but let's also look at, like, are there zoning changes that we can make that are going to make it easier for the private sector to bring on housing more on board? Mm-hmm. Is there things that we can do to pressure homeowners or incentivize homeowners to free up their empty homes to provide more rental opportunities? Are there structures that we can set up so that we can look at affordable home and land ownership, which I think we talk about rentals a lot, but I think part of the solution also is certainly from the regional district side is looking at ways that we can play a role in development that puts land into the hands of young people and families in an affordable way.
Yes. We often don't look at that in our rural and remote communities. But a huge portion of the cost of a home these days to own is the cost of the land. And if you're looking into rural and remote communities where you have the ability to get that piece of property for, you know, a lot less than what you're looking at in Campbell River or Nanaimo or Vancouver or Victoria, then, you know, that does offer an opportunity as well. So the cost of building over here is a lot more, but we still have the ability to take a look at that. I'm just going to give one organization a bit of a plug here that I've worked with in Campbell River that is absolutely stellar, and they go into affordable home ownership, and that's a not-for-profit organization called Habitat for Humanity. And they have been able to take people with their holding of their mortgage and all that and put them into home ownership to get them actually into the market, which is something that young people have a really hard time being able to accomplish today.
The last SRD housing survey actually pointed out that the majority of people in this region that are struggling with affordable housing are youth, are under the age of 40.
Lonnie Taylor, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.